Let's roll and begin. First time in the new year speaking with Congressman Fred Upton. Thank you for coming in.
Well, happy new year. Good to see you.
Let's begin with that fiscal cliff deal which passed last week. You did vote for it. As you explain that vote to people, what's the best part of it?
Well, actually, there's a lot of things that are involved. For me, I can tell you what the worst part is. Why didn't we do that answer first?
I was going to ask you that,
Well, for me, I would have preferred a grand bargain, right? Let's get this done with. Let's get it behind us. Let's move forward. But it was pretty clear the last couple of weeks that that wasn't going to happen. So really, I see three steps. This was the first one. The best thing in it is that we locked in the tax code really permanently. You'll remember that in the past, and I spoke to a number of agriculture folks earlier this morning, and you know, it always seemed as though the end of the year our tax rate's going up or down. What's going to happen to the AMT? I mean, what do you got all these things that expire, and you never really know. And we now have certainty in the tax code. So whether it's estate planning, it's now 40% is what that tax is going to be. It's $5 million you're able to protect without taxation. That's indexed. And, you know, it would have gone back up to 55%. It would have gone down. The $5 million would have been a million. It would have been a mess every year for financial planners and families, small businesses to figure things out. It's now locked in.
Hold on just a second. I just want to ask you, though. I mean, if you say it's locked in,
it's now permanent. So it doesn't expire a year or 5 years from now. It's now permanent.
But do you still want to do some sort of comprehensive tax reform?
Yeah, well, I do. We'll get into that.
All right.
The middle class tax rates, they're locked in. They're not going to bounce up and down. The AMT, which is the minimum tax, that's now locked in and indexed. You know, we did a number of extenders. We extended, obviously, had the tax code been allowed to expire, you wouldn't have been able to write off your state and local income or property taxes. I mean, can you imagine if that had happened? So in essence, on the tax side, things are now done. We now go to the next step, which is the debt ceiling. Don't know yet how that's going to plan out. But it's going to be, I'll tell you, from certainly the House side of things, is we're going to be looking at spending cuts, spending reforms. My sense is that you'll see the sequester. This is, of course, an across-the-board cut of about 10%, protects things like Social Security and veterans, food stamps, things like that. But my sense is that sequester is going to be pretty much allowed to come into play here.
It's going to hold the spending cuts where
they're at. It was a 2-month delay, but that kicks in March 1st, and it will kick in unless there are offsets to that. The House had passed a couple times last year offsets, Senate never took them up, but that's now in place to kick in March 1st. That'll be a big part of the debate over the next couple of weeks as it relates, obviously, to the debt ceiling and, you know, other spending cuts that'll, you know, as the Speaker has said, the debt ceiling itself will have to be matched with spending cuts, in essence, dollar for dollar. So that'll be the debate the next couple of weeks. Then the third step will be tax reform. I'm one that believes that we need tax reform, not only on the corporate side, but also on the individual side as well, to try to make it more simpler, fairer, et cetera. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. President Obama, in the debates that he had with Mitt Romney, talked about lowering the rate to be more competitive with the rest of the world, to get it under 30%, jettison a lot of the deductions that are out there. No one, at least I haven't found anyone yet, that was real happy that General Electric didn't pay any taxes a few years ago, and they used, I would imagine, every loophole that they could find to offset any tax liability. That's got to change, and I think you'll see that happen in a bipartisan way. Probably early this summer, you'll see legislation get to both the House and the Senate. So I see, you know, what could have been maybe a grand bargain in December didn't happen that way. But I think you'll see these three steps. The first one is now done, and that's locking in the tax rates. But now the real issue now in the next couple of weeks will be on the spending side, and then long-term tax reform will be step number three.
Let's talk about the debt ceiling for a moment. How hard a line or do you think Republicans will hold? How hard a line do you plan to hold on raising the debt ceiling?
Well, there's, you know, there's a lot of discussion going on now. I would say, and we may have some test votes that lead up to the debt ceiling itself. I would almost be willing to say that you may see a vote just to raise the debt ceiling without any strings attached. It'll fail. I think it'll fail about 2-1. Maybe you'll see a debt ceiling with there's some chatter this last weekend about raising more taxes. I don't think that's going to happen in any scenario. But maybe you'll have a vote and just show one way or another, is are you going to raise the debt ceiling based on raising more taxes? My guess is that vote too would fail. So it really then comes down to raising the debt ceiling with spending cuts. And I think at the end of the day, that'll be the equation that wins. And the real issue now over the next couple of weeks, remember, we have a new Congress. And in the House, we have something like 65 new faces. In the Senate, changes there as well. Numbers are different, but you've got some new faces there. And let's hope that we can come to some agreement. And again, I think that because the first two would be rejected, raising the debt ceiling without any strings, and that happened back in the 90s, or coming back and let's just look at raising more taxes. Again, I think that issue is now done. That was, even though we locked in the tax rates, just about everyone will be paying more taxes. So that issue is now done, off the table, and now the issue really becomes on the spending side, and see if we can get some type of agreement.
You mentioned before the idea of roughly a dollar for dollar trade-off. If for every dollar you raise the debt ceiling, there's a dollar in spending cuts. Is that hard? Is that a line in the sand that you're not going to cross?
I think that's the way that you'll see the House proceed. Now, I don't know. You may see an issue. Again, we've only been in session for a couple of days. You might see, there was a real frustration, obviously, not only with the country, but certainly within the Congress as well, that things took so long to get to a conclusion, literally on the very last day, New Year's Day. I think that's the first time Congress has been in session in 60 years. 1951, I think, was the last time that it actually happened. We had votes that day. I'd like to, I think that there's some possibility that you'll actually see a race between the House and the Senate and the White House to put their proposal out first or earlier and compete against each other, maybe, rather than wait till the very end.
Wouldn't that be a dramatic change from the way things have been done recently on just about anything? Because when you put a proposal out there, it's easier for people to nitpick at it and point out the problems with
it. Yeah, but everyone knows that this is coming, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. Again, we've only had two legislative days so far. I'm home this week, and votes again occur on Monday. Both the Republicans and Democrats go for a retreat for a couple days in the next couple weeks. So I think once you complete that and you get the inauguration of the president coming up on the 21st of this month, so I'd say by early February, rather than waiting until the end of the month of February, you'll begin to see some real proposals get out there early on, probably in the next couple weeks.
One of the things that you said to the Herald Palladium about voting for the deal which averted the fiscal cliff, you said that the markets were up right after that deal was approved, proof that the House had acted correctly. You added the markets, quoting here, would have tanked today if we had not gotten an agreement. I want to ask you about that in regards to the debt ceiling, because the markets did go down around the time of the standoff on the debt ceiling and eventually came back up afterwards. But how much do you calculate that into whether or not you take a hard stand on one deal or another?
Well, I was there on the TARP vote when you watched on the TV screen the market went down 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 points. And, we were right at the edge there of the fiscal cliff. I mean, who wasn't tired of that news, of the news in the days leading up to it? And you'll remember when the Senate voted for the package, it was 2:30 in the morning, 2:33 exactly, and we voted on it a little bit later on New Year's Day. And the market went up literally because the agreement had been announced the day before on Monday, New Year's Eve. And the market was up substantially, and then again, markets closed New Year's Day and then the next day. But 450-some points in 2 days, it would have gone down had we not gotten a conclusion. Tax rates going up on everyone, and you couldn't have put it together again because, remember, you got a new Congress. So you got the swearing in. The committees haven't been, you know— we're in office.
You go back to square one on
you
every
go back
piece of
to square one on everything, and the committees have to organize. So, as an example, the committee that I chair, Energy and Commerce, jurisdiction over lots of things. Yes, we know who our new members are going to be. Well, we've got five new members on our committee on the Republican side. The Democrats have a number of new members as well. We don't organize until the 22nd of January. That's when you formally, you know, organize your subcommittees and, you know, you organize with the rules that are in place to go forward. That's the same with the Ways and Means Committee and others. It takes weeks to get the new members. You know, and the Senate's a little bit different because they're only a third of their body gets replaced every 2 years. But for the House, all these new members, I mean, it would have been weeks and you would have had chaos. You had, you know, all these different expiring tax provisions. Milk prices would have doubled literally this week. As you look to your ag community, and crop insurance is so important for us and our, you know, our apple growers, just to use that as an example, were decimated with last year's freeze. Those that survived had crop insurance. No, it doesn't provide for the whole loss, but at least they've got that. Well, guess what? You can't even buy crop insurance with an expiration of the farm bill. That was included here. As people try to file their early tax returns for 2012, again, the ability to deduct state and local income taxes, property taxes was one of the provisions that was extended. Oh, it would have been chaos, pure chaos in the market. I'm convinced would have gone down 600-700 points in the first day, would have continued that decline. So as you look at the average Joe out there, yeah, they're going to pay a lot more in taxes. And if they have anything in an IRA or a portfolio, guess what? Its value probably just dropped 10, maybe even 15%. And it would have been awful for the country. And one of the reasons then why it passed by such a margin, 89-8 in the Senate, in the House, 257-167, a clear majority, certainly in the Michigan delegation, Republicans and Democrats coming together to say, you know what, the interests of the country have got to come first.
Reuters had an article on yesterday, questioning whether or not the fiscal cliff deal, and as you say, locking in the tax code for now, if that makes it more difficult to do comprehensive tax reform in the future. What do you think?
Well, Dave Camp from Michigan is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. Max Baucus, a Democrat from Montana, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. For us here in Michigan, our senator, Debbie Stabenow, serves on the Senate Finance Committee. Sandy Levin, Democrat from Michigan, serves on the House Ways and Means Committee as well. Though I've not had a chance to talk to Senator Stabenow since we got sworn in last week, I have spent a little time talking to Senator Baucus, and you know Dave Camp is probably one of my very best friends in the House. They're absolutely committed to doing tax reform. They had dozens of hearings in this last year. It's not going to all go for naught. We've really not seen major tax reform since 1986. It was before I was in Congress, you were out of school.
The year you were elected,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, it was before I was elected, actually. Yeah. It was the Kemp-Roth bill and under President Reagan, and you know all three have passed away. And we're more than overdue for tax reform. So I really do think that you're going to see it. Again, it did play in the debates between the presidential candidates this last month. I was with the chairman of Pfizer, and he reminded me well that, you know, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, 35%. Switzerland's at 18%. It doesn't take a genius to figure out, whoa, someone can buy some of these companies out. They got the lower tax rate, particularly on the corporate side, and all of a sudden those operations shift someplace overseas. Canada, to stimulate their economy in the last couple of years, reduced their corporate rate. Japan, after they had the terrible tsunami and their economy, they reduced their corporate tax rates. We're now we're on the top of the wrong cliff, highest in the world. That's got to change. And on the individual side, there's plenty of room here for tax reform. And what I think can be meaningful and certainly bipartisan to get done.
You have said that there's going to be some changes in entitlements, Social Security, Medicare. What can future retirees expect?
Well, let's just think about one thing. First of all, I am going to do everything I can to protect current beneficiaries. There's no attempt here to reduce benefits for people currently drawing Medicare, Social Security, et cetera. But just if you look at the demographics, we have 10,000 Americans hitting age 65 every day. So we have 50 million Americans that are 65 and older that qualify for Medicare and Social Security. By 2030, not too far away, that 50 million is going to be 78 million. You look at the share of funding, hundreds of billions of dollars for these programs, and you just know that under the current system, we're going to have to make some reforms. And I don't know what they're going to be. I sure hope that they're going to be bipartisan. We're going to try again everything that we can to protect those seniors today. You can't possibly expect someone, pick an age, 82 years old, that's going to go back to work because their benefits are being reduced. You don't want to see that. But we're going to have to tell primarily our younger workers that, hey, start planning for the future. We're going to have incentives for, a variety of different things, but it may not be the same plan or choices for you as it is for your parents or your grandparents. And again, I don't know what those changes are going to be, that is the fastest growing area of federal spending. And I would imagine, and so far as, again, we've not seen major changes. Social Security change, last big Social Security Act change was in 1983. And it extended the age of eligibility to 67, moved it from 65 to 67 years old. It phased that in gradually over a couple of decades. And, you may see some of those types of changes as we look to the future. But, again, I would hope that they would be bipartisan.
The Washington Post, Brad Plumer, recently put together an extensive piece on defense spending in the United States, pointing out a couple of things. One is the U.S. Spent more than the next 13 nations combined in 2011. Since 2001, the base defense budget has gone from $287 billion to $530 billion, and that doesn't even account for the—
What year did that start? I'm sorry.
Since 2001. Since 2001. Now, of course, there were the terrorist attacks that year. However, that rise from $287 billion to $530 billion does not include the primary cost of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. How much would you be willing to look at defense cuts and spending reductions?
Well,
there?
We need a strong defense. I don't think anyone really quibbles with that. But for me, for one, I've argued for some time that it's time to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. We've been there now more than a decade. Bin Laden's been gone for some time now. And I voted with others to bring our troops home 2 years ago. But I was on the losing side. It was actually a pretty close vote. I want to say it was maybe 10 votes between the other side and where I was. But, yeah, we were spending at that time $140 billion a year. And I know that President Karzai is going to be in Washington this week. But it's time to bring our folks home. And I voted to do that. And I know that President Obama wants to bring our troops home by, I want to say, the end of next year, or most of them, maybe leave a group, I want to say, maybe 10,000 folks. And we'll see where things head. But, yeah, as you look towards getting us back on a fiscal track that makes some sense, i.e. leading to a balanced budget. Defense is going to be one of the areas that we certainly take a careful look at, no question about it. And we'll look at some areas, again, Afghanistan being one that would have been a pretty sizable savings had we been able to get on a track of bringing our troops home a little bit earlier than what we'll be doing.
We've not had you in since the shooting in Connecticut at school there. Former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords is launching a group today, which is called Americans for Responsible Solutions, aimed at solutions on gun violence. She has an op-ed with her husband, Mark Kelly, in USA Today, and it says, in response to a horrific series of shootings that has sown terror in our communities, victimized tens of thousands of Americans, and left one of its own bleeding and near death in a Tucson parking lot, Congress has done something quite extraordinary, nothing at all.
Well, a couple things. We all, you know, when she was shot 2 years ago now, we all were very saddened, certainly about that. And, you know, words can't express our terrible feelings about what happened in Connecticut this last month as well. I mean, I can remember I was at a lunch that day, and as I went to it, I heard about a shooting, and it was after the lunch that I found out the gruesome details. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the vice president's report is going to do. I'm not sure that, you know, whatever we do would have stopped that particular individual. As I understand it, the school was had a pretty good security lock on it. He shot his way through Connecticut bans semi-assault weapons, and the guns were purchased by his mother, who I presume had a stellar record. Again, I don't know, in out of state, up in New Hampshire. The whole issue of videos and, you know, what this young man was doing. I mean, Michigan, we've had a pretty good background check, I understand, for a long time. Other states haven't done nearly what we do today. Should mental illnesses, should all those things be factors? I think they should be. I think we have to expand that information and find out what states have done. It's going to take some careful study. The wheels are beginning to turn. We're anxious to see the different proposals, and not only that comes out from the president, but what actually might be able to move through the House or the Senate. I know our committee, Energy and Commerce, we well could have some hearings in our oversight, though we don't have jurisdiction over guns per se. It would be Judiciary Committee. I think we're going to look at have some hearings, at least one on mental illness, that type of thing, and see if there is some way that we can deal with the situation. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's that debate is certainly starting.